Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Football Friday with Mr. Sal Capaccio. He joins us on the Western Hotline. Football Friday brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way. We owe you improving the game plan, too, which is brought to you by Bath Fitter. Improve your bath in one day with Bath Fitter. It just fits. Game plans for this one, Sal, might be interesting. The Patriots don't necessarily want the win on some level, but I'm sure some of the players do, and their coach does, and their quarterback does, and it's going to be interesting to see how they game plan this one. Meanwhile, the Bills, it's kind of cool that they're openly talking about wanting this record for number of players to catch a touchdown in a season, because it's a team accomplishment. So it feels like it's the kind of thing that is okay to openly talk about.
Yeah, it's agreed with you guys. And it's something that I've asked several players about, including Mr. Trubisky yesterday, which I tweeted about, and Reggie Gilliam a couple days ago. And that is the theme. Hey, it's a team accomplishment, and we're trying to get it. We'd love to get it. It kind of goes with their everybody eats mantra and mentality, if they can get that. I don't know what kind of, you know, game plan the Patriots will have. My assumption is they'll play like they normally would. They're not the biggest, the most explosive team. They try to run the ball, and you know, you have Drake May make some plays. But I think the Buffalo Bills are going to go out there and do whatever they can to try and win this game with the players they have. Doesn't mean you're emptying the playbook, but maybe you have a few wrinkles in, you put on film that a team has to prepare for you in the playoffs. Certainly possible. But I think that the guys that are playing, like Mitch Trubisky, whoever's going to be at wide receiver, talked about Reggie Gilliam, I'm sure he's going to play a bit. The guys on defense, I think that their mindset is to go there and, you know, put one on and win and put something nice on film and roll into the playoffs here by helping their team get a big win.
In terms of how New England plays itself, are you tracking it all, like the quarterback stuff? Like, it's maybe really tough to figure out because they've kind of been back and forth this week on Drake May. Joe Milton, the guy who kind of flashed in the preseason, said the other day that he talked like maybe he expects to play. So maybe the New England quarterback thing will be the most telling, you know, way to figure out how motivated New England is.
Yeah, and I don't even know. I mean, it certainly, Joe, I think motivated could be a part of a word to, like, what is their accomplishment? I don't think it's trying to lose. It might be, no, they don't really care if they win either, right? I mean, it's like, hey, we're not actively trying to lose, but the game doesn't mean anything. So if they win, if they lose, they're not going to be, you know, upset about it. So why not evaluate some guys? They know they have their quarterback in Drake May, but sure, I'm sure there's some guys that, you know, both team-wise for an evaluation purpose, and individually, those guys, they probably would like to give them an opportunity to get in the game. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see some substitutions on both sides, and how both teams play it going, through the game, not just starting, but, get into the third quarter, get into the fourth quarter. You see a different quarterback come in. It wouldn't surprise me for the Patriots. I don't think it would be because, oh my God, we're winning. Let's put somebody else in to try and lose. I think you might have a plan going into saying, hey, let's give some guys a little extra time here so we can evaluate them and get them on film.
They almost have to be careful with messaging on that front, though. Like, I would agree with you that, like, to me, if I'm New England, I would have that planned out already. Like, May maybe starts the game, and, like, well, at this around this time, if we want to get a look at Milton, young guy, maybe he's been practicing hard throughout the year, like, we'll give him a chance to play. But they do have to be careful, because if they are winning the game and they do that, perception around the league is going to be New England's trying to throw the game.
Yeah, for sure, right? And I mean, I don't know if you can do anything about it. What was the game a few years ago? Was it Washington and Philly?
The Giants. Like
I thought it was
the
Giants.
Sunday night game,
I think,
at the
Philly,
end of the game.
Philly was involved. I think you're right about
and
that.
And the Giants were mad about what happened, or the Commanders. Somebody was mad about how it went. But yeah, they took out Hurts, or they took out, and they put in a backup
something
quarterback.
Like that.
Yeah, Doug Peterson got a lot of flack for it.
So yeah, you're right, guys. I mean, no doubt that you could have that happen, around the league, and you could have that happen with, other teams. And well, if the Patriots do that, then maybe the Giants and Raiders are mad or something.
Yeah.
But you know what I was thinking about the other day is the NFL went to this a few years ago. They said, okay, week 18, week 17 back, several years ago when we didn't have the extra one, was we're going to make all these last week in all division, because you had so many games that didn't matter. But here we are. And a lot of these games don't matter. You're kind of in the same spot anyway, whether you have division games or not. Like, there's not a ton of games that really matter on the schedule. There's a few, but it's not like it's, like, overwhelming. Like, oh, my God, they did this great job of putting the division games together. So it's kind of interesting. A lot of times it can really backfire, because if divisions are settled, these games at the end of the year kind of don't matter. And that's really what's happened here.
Yeah. 803-0550 to jump in with Sal if you want to. Let's get to the Barnes Firm Injury Report, brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. It's a different kind of injury check-in, Sal, because we've got guys that we don't expect to play. And, of course, anybody that's on the borderline would probably be kept out. So what are we looking at for the Barnes Firm Injury Report?
Well, the good news is Terrell Bernard returned to practice yesterday. He's still not going to play in the game, but to see him out there, after Sean McDermott said he's somewhere between day to day and week to week, was really good news, and running around. I have some video I posted of him as well, both on Twitter and at the WGR550.com at the website, if people want to see that, because, seeing him out there working with the linebackers in individual position work, was very good. So that was the only change, which was a good change. He went from a DNP to limited. He was upgraded. One of only two changes. The other one was Amari Cooper actually showed up on the injury report with his back injury. Now, remember when he caught that pass for the touchdown, he lay down on the turf for a little while. He was evaluated for a head injury. And he said after the game, he also had hurt his tailbone. So I'm guessing that was it. However, I wouldn't worry too much about it. He was a full participant in practice. Does that mean, he might be one of these guys? He's a 10-year veteran. He got banged up on that play. Maybe we don't see him on Sunday. We'll see how all of this goes. But those are the only two changes. Terrell Bernard gets upgraded, and Amari Cooper shows up, even though he's still a full participant. We still had DeMar Hamlin, Cam Lewis, Taylor Rapp, all three safeties, as well as Curtis Samuel, wide receiver, in red non-contact jerseys, all limited.
We've talked about this mostly with linebacker, Sal, but do you think there is any chance that there would be a change in who's starting at safety when Hamlin comes back, or is it 100% his job when he's healthy?
I don't think it's 100%, Joe, after what Sean McDermott said the other day, but I still would think that it's going to be DeMar Hamlin. This is really interesting, because McDermott did say, first of all, not that I would expect him to say otherwise necessarily, but he did say he's been very impressed with his improvement over the last four games. But when asked if he would have a more significant role, he said, we'll see. Now, what does that mean, more significant? You could interpret that as starting. You could interpret that as, does he become a dime safety? Are there situations you put him in where he actually plays on top of the other safeties who are in there? I'm not sure. I think that Cole Bishop has shown that he can handle, what they've given him so far. He's done a good job against the run. They actually do. I think they have more options when he's on the field than DeMar, like how they want to play defense. You've seen him in the box. You've seen him at all kind of three levels, really, to be honest with you. So I do think that that starts to come into play. I'm very interested in this. We also know Sean said earlier this week they'd like to get DeMar some reps this week before they head into the playoffs. I think at the end of the day, for me, I just try to read into how this team normally operates, and the word trust always is what I have in my head, which is the Bills know DeMar Hamlin's played well this year. He really has. You know, they trust him to know and understand where he's supposed to be, keep everything in front of him. You know, the Bills don't give up these big plays in the passing game. It's not the best, you know, pass defense, as you guys have pointed out. You know, this year I just read your tweet, Jeremy, about, you know, the pass defense. It's not been the best numbers, but they're not getting beat over the top really this year. And a lot of that is DeMar Hamlin understands the defense. They trust him. So I do think their door is open a little bit for that.
You know, one thing about that conversation, Sal, we talk about this with linebackers a lot. Could that be opponent specific? Because if Bishop is better in the run game, all of a sudden I'm thinking about Baltimore. But if I'm thinking about Denver, who does not run the ball as well, like, that might be different, how they're going to mix and match. Yep. And you're talking about, like, Bishop gives them more options out there. We could see lots of different looks that we've not yet seen from them now that opponent specific stuff gets down to a very fine point in these games. Like, that's what Bills fans, I think, are waiting for, is a McDermott Babich masterpiece, finger quotes here, right? Like, what can you cook up in the postseason? How can you use these pieces?
I agree with you that it can be, and it probably should be, and maybe will be, that they get more opponent specific. I would say, even if it's not opponent specific, it might be just situational specific, right? Like, a philosophy against each opponent or the personnel might be the same starting 11, but maybe on third down against the Bengals looks different on third down against the Broncos, you know, depending on which one you play in the first round. Third down on the Ravens, or even first down, maybe first down. The thing about the Ravens, guys, I just have this thought that they're going to play base defense if and when they see the Ravens. I don't think it's about the safeties. I think it's an extra linebacker. I think that's when you might see Bernard, Milano, and Dorian Williams come in the game. Now, to do that, you have to take Taron Johnson off the field, but it might be what you have to sacrifice, considering, you know, his size and, you know, how that looks. So I do think that you're probably looking at different ways they're going to massage the defense here. And I've really thought over the last few weeks, by not rushing Rapp back, by not rushing Hamlin back, and Rasul Douglas, I really think, especially at the safeties, that they may have been even kind of playing around with different combinations. Let's see what we can do. Yeah, you know what? They got the division wrapped up, and, you know, it's not that they don't want to win, but let's see what these guys can do together when this guy's next to him, or as opposed to this guy. What different things can we do? And I wonder if they've done that a little bit more on purpose to see what they have to figure out what combinations they can use in the playoffs.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Sal, yesterday was also Pro Bowl snub day for everybody, for the did not get in. The Bills only have two Pro Bowlers. Who to you would have been the most egregious omission on the Bills front?
Well, only two Pro Bowlers, but they do have, what, how many alternates?
A bunch of alternates,
right? So I guess, so from that aspect, I would say the biggest one that's off either list to me is Christian Benford. Like, I think he's the biggest, you know, person that deserves recognition. But look, I understand how Pro Bowl voting goes, and Christian Benford's not a flashy name. And, you know, it's not like he goes out there and gets 6-7 interceptions. I think he has 2 on the year. And, you know, I understand that's how it works. It stinks, and he deserves to be recognized as one of the better corners in the conference, if not the league. And that didn't happen. So I think that's number one. And I definitely think there's an argument for James Cook, especially when you put Cook's numbers next to Joe Mixon's. I mean, Joe Mixon started off the season really well, and I think that's probably what vaulted him into, you know, the consciousness of getting voted. Because if you look at Cook versus Nixon in almost every metric, like, James Cook should be in the Pro Bowl over Joe Mixon, and he's not, and that's probably a pretty big one as well.
Sal Capaccio joining us. Yeah, on Cook there, it's... I mean, he tweeted about it, his displeasure, like the fact that he's unhappy about it, which is another window into, you know, these guys do care about being recognized.
Yeah.
They absolutely care about you know, they put a lot of work in. They want to be recognized as the best, and you know, it's just a competitive fire.
Is there, maybe either of you know off the top of your heads, is there also contract related stuff if you get named to a Pro Bowl? Like, don't you qualify for something higher, or is that only maybe for like a first round?
That
pick?
Is
fifth year. Option
that is
stuff.
Joe. It's a great question. That's for your fifth year option if you're a first round pick.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
However, you could have it baked into your contract. For guys, generally not rookie deals, though.
Right.
You know, rookie deals you're not going to have, they're pretty much all set. But James Cook wouldn't qualify for that. That would be Greg Rousseau would. But that's already been set. You know, they've already exercised their fifth year on Greg Rousseau, you know, for next year. But yes, Joe, it's a good question. Like, yeah, I've always thought that was really weird. Like, you're relying on, like, a fan voting process in Pro Bowls to determine how much money you get in your fifth year option, which is kind of wild.
Right, because really, like, a lot of it is fan vote. Like the reason, like, Mixon, I don't think there's any argument he's had a better season than Cook. Why is he in? He's more famous. Right? Like, that's probably the biggest reason. Cook, like, we were talking earlier, Sal, about, like, what the not the biggest surprises are, like, the best thing that's kind of come about for the Bills since the beginning of the year. And Cook, like, I don't know if he'd be number one on that list, but his vision and his, like, they've kind of figured out his role, I feel like, after two seasons of, like, you're not really trusting him all the time in pass protection, and maybe you're not even going to throw him the ball all the time because there's drop stuff, but as a runner, like, I think Cook has really thrived, and they've figured out, like, the perfect role for him as in year three.
Yeah, and I think, Joe, what's helped is, and I go back to week one against Arizona, and it's way back, right? And we had Chris Brown's pregame interview was with Brandon Bean. So if you're listening to the radio broadcast, the pregame show, and Brandon Bean is out with Chris Brown. And Chris said something like, you know, has anything really stood out to you or maybe surprised you at training camp? Whichever way he phrased it. And I thought the answer was really interesting. I keep thinking about from Brandon Bean. Brandon Bean said in that interview in week one, he said, I think we have the best running back room we've had since I've been here. And what you're saying, I think, ties into that, Joe, which is it's not just figuring that out for Cook. It's been able to happen because of the other guys they have on the team, right? Like, you don't have to force James Cook into roles or situations that maybe it's not the best for him. And I think last year, because of Damian Harris's injury, they just never got to that. But, you know, that was kind of what the plan was, to build this room like they have right now. So I agree. They have a good running back room right now. And they kind of have guys that can do all different things and different skill sets. Ty Johnson's your third down back. I mean, how about that? Finding this Ty Johnson as your third down back and how consistent and good he's been on third down for this team. Like, I just think that's been a really nice find for this team and allowed them to, what you're saying, Joe, just you don't have to use James Cook in all these situations. Then, of course, you have Ray Davis, who could do a little bit of everything. And then he's a more physical runner sometimes. You can put him in those situations. So I just think they've kind of found the really perfect balance in that room.
Back at the offensive line cell, you know, Dawkins, one of the guys named to the Pro Bowl. Another transition the Bills went through that, you know, the receiver one is big, the safety one is big, and then maybe the most successful of all is what happened at center with Connor McGovern. Like, Mitch Morse was a surprise cut to me. He said he wanted to be back, and the Bills opted to go to Connor McGovern, saying he could play that position, and he's played it very well and getting recognition as an alternate. Like, a lot of moves have gone well for this team, and the McGovern one, it feels like it's finally starting to gain traction, is one that really worked out for them.
Yeah, I feel like when they brought Connor McGovern in last year, they probably had this plan in mind. Right. I mean, you have to think that might have been it, which is, you know, we're going to go one more year with Mitch and then we're going to move Connor McGovern to center. And Connor McGovern, you know, he, for his part in this, he said from the very beginning, he has always felt better at center. He was a center. He was one of the most highly rated centers in the country coming out of high school. But then he got moved in college to guard, and that's where he really has played most of his career, not all of his career in the NFL. And then he goes back to center. And I agree with you, Jeremy. Like, Mitch Morse was a really good player for this team. Like, he did a lot of really nice things. I think the biggest difference between Morse and McGovern is sometimes a really stout defensive tackle slash mostly nose guard against Mitch Morse was a really tough ask for him. And I don't think that's been the case for McGovern. I think he's done a really good job against some of these bigger, more physical defensive linemen and defensive lines. And I think that that's something they needed to have happen here. Plus, you know, by doing that, you know, David Edwards did a nice job for them. And I think that was the biggest question for me. Osiris Torrance in his second year, he did such a good job last year. I didn't really have a question there. You know, David Edwards was one to me. I was always more worried about Edwards at guard than McGovern at center, knowing that McGovern has played center. And this is something he'll probably be fine at. But David Edwards has turned out pretty well, too. And I think all of it just comes together because you have a really excellent offensive line coach in Aaron Cromer. Aaron Cromer's done an amazing job. And, you know, people have never listened to Eric Wood talk about Aaron Cromer. They should listen to Eric Wood talk about Aaron Cromer. He's played with them. Eric Wood has said many times, Aaron Cromer might be the best offensive line coach he's ever played with, or at least one of them. And he speaks a lot to how, and I love this, how Aaron Cromer doesn't like teach you one technique or two, or this technique, this is how you do it. He literally teaches every offensive lineman based on what their body type is like, what's on what their skill set, and how you can be more efficient at what you do in your technique. At Osiris Torrance is going to be different than Osiris Torrance is going to be different than Deion Dawkins' technique. And it's really interesting. And I love that about Aaron Cromer. He's a really smart guy. And, you know, he's been a offensive coordinator. He's been an interim head coach. I mean, I don't know if he has aspirations to be an OC again, but it feels like he's just, that's what he is. He's an offensive line coach, loves his job. His guys really respect him, and that's good. And the last thing on the offensive line I'll say, because you're right about everything you're saying here, they're all locked up, guys. Every one of these guys is under contract over the next couple of years. It's really interesting. Even Alec Anderson is an equal rights free agent. Just offer him the minimum. You got him. Ryan Vandermark, same thing. Offer him the minimum. You got him. Tommy Doyle, yes, I know he's been injured. He is a UFA, but they've already these guys are all under contract going forward.
And Brown, they signed right before the season, and that was the little not quite totally out of left field, but I remember it was a little surprising when that happened, Sal. And like, he has answered the bell in every way, I think. I mean, like, a lot of his grading and like the win rate stuff, like his top five, maybe top 10 at the position, and hit his age. Really, like, I guess the whole thing, I want to mention this too while maybe knocking on wood because I don't want to jinx anything, but they've been insanely healthy as a unit for 2 years now. Like, they have not had any big injuries there to where, like, man, if they're all locked up and they're all playing this well and they're all going to be able to stay healthy, like, maybe not by league standards, but by franchise standards, maybe could be looking at like one of their best lines in team history.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with that. And you're right, you know, knock on wood, because it has been something really, I think they take pride in too, you know, being there for one another. I remember when Spencer missed his one game and he said like one of his goals was to not miss a snap. Like, he wanted to play 100% of the snaps like Osiris Torrance did last year. And he tried to give it a go that week and he couldn't. And, you know, it was unfortunate. But Joe, even when they have a guy miss a little bit of time or a game, these guys come in. Like, Ryan Vandermark did a great job that day, you know, for Spencer Brown, right? And we've seen that happen. Alec Anderson, no, obviously we can't forget about the sixth offensive lineman here, who's another guy who, you know, he's a young guy. He's an equal rights free agent at the end of the year. They've had this plan for him. He plays a lot on the offensive line as an extra man. He can come in as a guard. He can come in as a center if you need him. You know, I think they've done a really good job of finding their line and developing them and, you know, having a vision for them going forward.
Sal Capaccio, news today, Mike Vrabel will interview with the Jets today.
Hmm.
We talked off air a little bit the other day, Sal, about Rivera. Two for that. Like, that's between Rivera and Vrabel. I might think they're very one's a much better idea than the other, but they're clearly going for a certain type of coach.
Well, you wonder how much they're feeling. Well, I felt like this was something that the Bills wanted to do after Rex was like, let's get somebody that we feel like is a professional. Not to say that Robert Saleh wasn't, but
that's what I mean.
Yeah, they've kind of been through a lot over there and a lot of sideshow stuff. And I wonder if a hiring of a guy like Vrabel would feel like somebody that's going to keep this thing on the rails is the idea. But who knows with that owner? That owner himself might be part of the problem. So,
well, that's what I think about where, like, a guy like Vrabel, who I think both these, yes, you're a certain type of guy, Joe, you're right. I think that certain type of guy is they need a leader, right? That's what they need. They need someone to be a leader in that organization and say, look, we're stopping this nonsense. We need to go concentrate on football, be a leader. Mike Vrabel, though, also brings with him a bit of a personality where I think he is a very good leader, but does his type of personality clash with the owner wanting to meddle? You know what I mean? If that makes sense. That's why there was a power struggle with him in Tennessee. and he was out. Him and the GM, right? That they clashed a little bit. So
for what it's
you
worth,
wonder about that.
For what it's worth, Vrabel was right on that one.
Well, I think
there
might have been two of them, right? Because the original GM, I think he got into a battle with him because he didn't want them to trade AJ Brown.
Yes,
and I almost wonder, Sal, if Vrabel being so right about that is kind of what led to maybe more friction with the next GM, which is, dude, you're listening to me. I was the guy who was right about AJ Brown. So
I wouldn't doubt it. You're right about that. So that's interesting. They also interviewed Lewis Riddick for their GM job.
Yeah.
A couple of days ago or yesterday or whatever it is. And then you know Vrabel could be out there also, you know, for the Patriots. There's also a report out there, and I shouldn't say report, but I saw yesterday, and I didn't see this myself, but some of my colleagues have tweeted that according to the Transactions Wire, the Bills had released or waived Nicholas Morrow, the linebacker, just to throw it out there, because I think that impacts what they're trying to do Sunday, guys. Because if they release Morrow, which appears that they might have here, then that allows them to sign someone from the practice squad to the active roster, and then they can still elevate two more people, which gives you three instead of two from what we talked about this week.
Right. Got a guess? Shavers, maybe?
Well, remember Zach Davidson, Jalen Virgil, and Tyrell Shavers.
Those
all
are the guys
out of elevations.
Right.
So I would think that one of them could be why they would do it, to sign them to the active roster. And then maybe that's how you get Mike White up on an elevation to become your backup quarterback.
Okay. All right. Sal Capaccio, Extra Point show today. What's the schedule?
Yeah. Schedule that Paul at 10:30. I mean, I was watching the game on my laptop last night, and then I'm like, I'm just going to get up. You know what? I'm going to watch the third period, go downstairs, watch. I was in bed. I'm going to start watching on TV, and man, so frustrating. But Paul said he'd be good to go, so we're hoping to have him at 10:30, and then Sean McDermott at 11 o'clock on an injury report. We'll see if he what he says about how the approach will be with some of these guys on Sunday, and then Pat Hammer with a weather check if you're going to New England, Foxborough, Boston, whatever on Sunday, and what that looks like.
And the
peek ahead to next week for the weather.
That's what I was going
to
ask for. Give us the 10-day. It looks like it'll be just kind of cold. A little cold spell has come in here. Highs in the upper 20s for the next few days, several days. Thank you, Sal.
You got it, guys.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline here as part of Football Friday, brought to you by Salino Law, Car Crash Call Salino, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way.
Yeah, I watched the end of the second period, and then somebody told me, one of my buddies texted me, like, you should just go to bed. This is like the Chiefs. Like, because you've made this point, right? Like, you know what's going to happen in a Chief game. Don't stay up for it. They're going to get a flag at the end. You know what's going to happen in this game. There's no point of staying up. They're going to blow the lead. And they blew the lead.
It is Football Friday. We'll be back in a snap. Brought to you by Snapdragon Apples.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs, or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's the official apple of the Buffalo Bills.
Good pressure down low by Thompson. Spins it to the net for rebound. Scores! Jason Zucker at the side of the goal. And he completes a hat-trick night here in Colorado.
One of the first moments of the game for the moments in life. Go forth to Firth Jewelers. Sabres fall in overtime to the Avalanche. They had a big lead in the game and lost to the Avalanche. It happened earlier in the season. This time they got the overtime, though. Last time they lost in regulation, right? Yeah.
Overtime. Well, I mean, the game-tying goal this time was scored with 7 seconds left.
Yeah.
So there wasn't much opportunity, I guess, to lose it in regulation.
Sure. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Happy New Year. Football Friday and wrapping up the regular season. If we were to give awards, like play of the year.
Ooh, play of the year would be tough, wouldn't it?
Well, how about this? Agree or disagree? Both the best and worst plays of the year involved a wide receiver tossing the ball to Josh Allen. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Was it a receiver in the Baltimore? I don't remember.
Yeah. Threw the ball to Allen, and then he got blasted.
Yeah, he got lit
and
off.
Fumbled, and that potential comeback ended, and everyone said, woof, not something we want to beat Brady the next day.
Yeah,
that was my bad. That's the worst play of the year, and the best play of the year is Amari Cooper pitching it to Allen, right? That's got to be the play of the year. Just because it's unique, and it's amazing. And
it's okay. It beats the Kansas City 4th-and-2 touchdown run. Because that was nuts.
Yeah.
I think you could. There are a million plays of the year every year with Allen. Like, those would be my top two. I might want to defend the Kansas City one, though, because, I don't know, it's just, I know it's not unique in the same way, but it's 4th down, it's Kansas City, and he's running through people on the way to the end zone, and the crowd getting louder as he gets closer and closer. Like, man.
What's the best non-Josh play of the year? Or Josh could be involved, but what player has the play of the year for the Bills that's not Josh doing the thing, mainly the thing?
Like, does Amari Cooper's catch on Sunday count?
Could.
Because Allen does throw that ball, and it's a perfect ball.
How about Shakir's 51-yarder against the Rams, where he catches it and kind of turns on the Jets? Like, I want to put that one in there.
Broke a tackle at the end, too.
I mean, Ty Johnson had a couple of pretty incredible plays, and James Cook's had some big runs.
He's had 4 40-plus-yard touchdown runs. He, though, like, his touchdown runs are smooth, and they're, like there's nuance to those runs, but he's not, it's not Marshawn Lynch running through a secondary, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's not going on, like, top 10 plays of the year.
Keon Coleman's catch over Tariq Woolen, it's pretty good.
That's not bad. Is there anything on defense? I was trying to think of a defensive play, and I can't really.
The play of the year from the defense.
I can't really think of one. Did Terrell Bernard have like a diving pick backwards at some point?
Yes.
That's in my head. I can't remember what the game was, though, where he like leapt into the air.
Whenever he came back to the lineup, he had one where he dropped and then he spun back the other way.
Yeah.
And like read the mind of the quarterback.
And he jumped up and he made a great catch.
Yeah.
Yeah. That might be it. None of these, though, are like, well, it's fine. They have a quarterback that gives you 100 of them. It doesn't matter if, you know, there's no one else on the team that gives you, like, these freakish plays, I guess. They're all pretty, some of these are pretty good, though.
Yeah. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. If you'd like to join us, it is Football Friday here on WGR. So, all right.
The Tyler Bass 61-yard field goal.
Yes.
I mean, just nominate that one.
Some of Bass's misses were worst plays.
I know, yeah. But his best play, 61 yards to win a football game against a division rival, is
pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah. You can give us a call if you want on that. Also asking, you know, looking back, what went better than expected and what didn't pan out? You can write to us or give us a call on that. The interception of Rodgers to seal the Jets game. That was the Terrell Bernard play. I believe that's Terrell Bernard.
Oh, okay. In on the Monday night game?
Maybe. Brian Hasnar tweeted at us. Might have been Roger. It might have been Rodgers, because that's right after they lose to Baltimore. That stretch of games in there, they lose to Houston, lose to Baltimore, and then the Jets are in position to maybe get into first place, and the Bills get the job done.
Yeah. I typed in Bills plays of the year. It's just all Josh Allen plays. It's like, we're definitely going to find anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, to follow up a story we tracked throughout the year, producer Josh watched the Chiefs holiday touchdown movie.
Yes.
He lost our Thursday three-way parlay tracker bet, who got the most right, the most wrong. And the punishment was having to watch the Chiefs holiday movie. And yesterday, like, no Thursday night football, wide open night, you settled in and you did it.
Unfortunately. Yes.
All right. Well,
it was.
Spoiler alert. Anybody that's really eager to see this film, what do we got?
Okay. So, basically, this story is about two families brought together by football. They each get season tickets to be Chiefs, like go to Chiefs games in 1969.
Okay.
They're right next to each other. There's two kids. They end up falling in love, you know, that whole love story thing. The Hallmark effect is in and out throughout the movie.
Okay. So the kids grow up together and they get together.
Yes. And then they have a kid of their own. And then the families stay united, you know, throughout the whole story and everything like that. The one family owns like a team store in the town they live in just outside of Kansas City. The other one owns, of course, a barbecue restaurant, whatever, where we get our first celebrity cameo. Donna Kelsey works as a manager in the barbecue restaurant and makes multiple appearances throughout the movie.
Okay.
We get a minute and 44 seconds into the movie before we get a Taylor Swift reference.
Okay. Ah.
There's a Polaroid with Christmas 1989 written on it. And that's the only Taylor Swift reference throughout the whole movie. But
we're counting that?
I think it makes sense.
Reference?
Okay. Because, yeah, that's like her whole thing for the one album, right?
Yep.
But anyway, so basically the main plot of the story is the grandfather on the one side of the family in 1969, when he gets the season tickets, is also given a vintage Chiefs hat by Santa Claus. He wears the hat on Christmas Day. That year, the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. The following year, the hat gets lost, and then the Chiefs go on a 50-year drought of going back to the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Christmas.
Going franchise history here is what the whole. Okay.
Yeah. So during Christmas of 2019, someone brings in the hat to sell it, and it ends up being, oh my God, it's Grandpa's hat. This is great. Whatever. Someone wears it on Christmas. They make it to the Super Bowl that year. And I think that's the year one of the years they won it. So the story about the hat is not only that it helps them win the Super Bowl, it just gets them there. Because that was part of they didn't win the one year.
I know where this is going. We got to get that hat.
Right.
Yeah.
We got to get that hat.
So going forward here. So from then on, a family member must wear the hat on Christmas Day, regardless of if the Chiefs play or not, and the Chiefs will make it to the Super Bowl. One year they didn't wear it, and that's when they lost in the AFC Championship game to the Bengals because there was like some family emergency, whatever. And
it's a family emergency. I can't wear the hat.
Yeah.
Well, no, there was like a whole story behind it. But anyway, aside from that, and then they lose in the Super Bowl, but then they were like, oh no, the hat just helps them get to the Super Bowl. We have to let the players do some of the work.
All right.
That was literally a line in the movie.
Okay.
Then, so that's like setting up the story. So the main male character, Derek, works as a director of fan engagement for the Chiefs, despite the fact that he had never really been a fan of football leading up to this job.
Okay.
He didn't really know the sport, didn't really know the teams, which is just kind of, okay,
mm-hmm.
How do you get that job then?
Is there game action?
Yeah.
Not really.
Okay.
Throughout the entire movie, you get 3 weeks of football.
Because the first week's
the bye week.
But there's no scenes of people playing football?
Like, what I'm picturing are like the Ted Lasso soccer scenes.
Yeah,
or like
a
little bit kind of, all right, we're all playing soccer
You do get highlights from the Chiefs-Packers game from 2023.
Like the real game?
Yes. On a TV. So that's a point in the movie where we're jumping a little bit ahead here, but basically this guy, Derek, is welcomed into the family and they don't know that at the time, but he works for them, blah, blah, blah. But they're watching this game and this part made me laugh out loud, like hysterically laugh out loud. They lose the game to the Packers, right, in real life. And then in the movie, they also lose this game. And the grandma proclaims, how did we lose? We were 14-point favorites. In real life, they were 5.5-point favorites.
Okay.
And of course, this game.
Graham played the alt spread there.
Basically.
Yeah. For.
So in this whole thing, they lose the game, and it's, oh no, if the Texans, Dolphins, and Browns win on Sunday, then the Christmas Day game essentially becomes you have to win to get into the playoffs. So then, they win the fan of the year and all this stuff.
Okay.
And the hat gets lost. So then the girl freaks out. Oh my God, we're going to lose the game. We're going to lose Christmas Day. We just won Fan of the Year based on the whole story that we win because we wear the hat on Christmas Day. That was like the whole thing of like, what are we going to do? They get to the game, they get presented Fan of the Year, and then the whole stadium is given replica vintage Chiefs hats. And then Santa Claus shows up and gives the original hat back to the family. And then that's it. You don't even see the game, so you don't even know if they win. But it's kind of...
But the hat makes
it
back.
So it's a story about a lucky hat.
Essentially, yeah. And the family is like really uber like aggressive about it. Like the guy laughs at their story at first, and they basically disown him.
This sounds less like a Chiefs movie and more like a hat movie.
It also sounds like
a movie about a hat that we had to force the Chiefs into.
Is there any chance that this hat that Grandpa had from way back when, is the Chiefs logo upside down? It was like he had ahead of his time?
Yes, it better
be. One of these cool hats these kids are wearing today where they're upside
thinking.
No?
No, unfortunately not. But of course you have all these different things, and the football scenes look like fake. Like the scenes in the stadium don't look real, but they also they're definitely in the stadium.
Is Mahomes in this movie?
Just no. So quickly.
Mecole Hardman is in the movie?
This movie is not about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift in any form or fashion.
Nope, that's a different movie. I actually had to look that up because I was looking for the nine-time MVP scene, and that was not in there.
What movie is that?
It's a Lifetime movie, apparently. Not a Hallmark movie.
Really?
What's the name of the movie you watched?
Holiday Touchdown.
Holiday Touchdown.
Apparently there's two. I didn't know
really?
That. Tuning in, I did not know that.
There's a second Chiefs Christmas movie?
No.
There can't be. There can't be. There's no way.
By the way, Clyde Edwards-Helaire does make an appearance and
steals the show.
Well, not really, but the fact that he makes the appearance in the movie and then is now not on the team in real life is just kind of wild. But overall,
terrible.
The plot was okay. Christmas vibes, like you got Christmas throughout, but mostly became a movie about superstitions. The corniness was just off the charts. Level of annoyance was just terrible. I gave it a 2 out of 10.
Not a 1. What saved it?
Honestly, like the story was like it was kind of like a quote unquote feel good story, I guess. It just didn't have the best acting at times. And if you're a Chiefs fan, you'll probably like it, but even then, it's still like pretty rough.
There is another Christmas movie.
I'm not watching that one.
This is the one we wanted you to watch.
That is based on Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. The Chiefs, though, are not in this movie, but it's based on Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. It's called Christmas in the Spotlight.
I'm not watching.
You have to watch that also.
No. Yeah, I think you do.
I have
a full book report here on the worst movie of all time.
You got lapped.
It can't be the worst of all time. You gave it a 2.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I'll give it a -2 then. Just like this is.
You got to watch the other one to see if it's a 1.
Yeah. You
got
to.
You got lapped.
No. I can't sit through another movie.
I can't believe
like that.
There's another one. There's been 2 this whole time?
I guess.
This is the one where the 9-time MVP receiver is from. Christmas in the Spotlight.
9-time MVP receiver.
We also meet Patrick Mahomes in this movie. Mm. If he's actually a real cat, apparently he is.
Mm. Yep.
Okay.
Taron Johnson had the ceiling interception against Aaron Rodgers. And Terrell Bernard had one against the Chiefs.
The Chiefs, yes. Yeah.
All right. Plays of the Year nominees. Josh has like the top 10. You get a lot of those.
I watched very quickly just now. There's like a 3-minute video the Bills put up 2 weeks ago. Best plays of 2024 so far, and their only non-Allen plays that I saw in there was the Bass 61-yard field goal and a couple James Cook runs. Yeah, that's it.
803-0550. It is Football Friday. You can give us a ring if you'd like. Brought to you by Salino Law, Car Crash Call Salino, and by Crosby's Pizza and Sub. Start your game day the Crosby's way. Football Friday, Bengals and Steelers tomorrow night. Ravens ahead of that. The spread in the Ravens game is up to 19.5.
I saw 20 in some places.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's going to be... Did I see that it's not going to be Dorian Thompson-Robinson? Hold on.
They're going further down the depth chart? Not Jameis?
They are starting Bailey Zappe.
All right.
Yeah, Bailey Zappe against the Ravens. Which actually might be better.
Might be. Baltimore wins the division if they win.
Yep.
They will lock in the 3 seed with that.
Pittsburgh's talking like they're still going for it against the Bengals, though, because they'll be playing for the 5, playing Houston, instead of the 6 playing Baltimore.
One stat I noticed from the first time those two teams played, Steelers and Bengals, Russell Wilson passed for like 415 yards.
Yeah.
And no receiver caught more than 75 yards. They spread the ball around a lot. Pickens had like 74 yards.
Okay.
But threw for 414 and spread around because Cincinnati's defense doesn't stop anybody. So we'll see. That could be a shootout. It is, maybe weather dependent, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, big game tomorrow. And if the Steelers win, what does Bills Mafia do? Take a big no Cincinnati fear going into Sunday? You don't really have to worry about Cincinnati until they win and the Dolphins and the Broncos look like they're going to lose.
Right.
So, go Pittsburgh, I guess. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550 to join us. It is Football Friday. Got a name showing up a little more than I might have expected on the thing that let you down this year in the regular season on the Bills. I'll get you that name next.